Does buying more mean we're saving less?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. President Obama wants to tackle the high school dropout rate, and a case the Supreme Court hears today that could hit the reset button on a couple of high-profile convictions. All that coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up by 0.5%. The NASDAQ by about 0.75%. The Dow higher now by 48 points, 10,373. AIG shares up about 12% in pre-market trading, now about 9% after it announced it's going to sell its Asian life insurance division, AIA, the sale helping AIG pay its debt to U.S. taxpayers. European shares are higher by 0.5% or more right now. And in Asia, shares in Hong Kong were up about 2%. We got word from the Commerce Department that personal spending rose by 0.5% while incomes were basically flat in January. What do those numbers mean? We're going to get some analysis this morning from Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist over at S&P Equity Research. He's with us live this morning from New York City. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So we have these numbers. What's at play here? I mean, it sounds to me like people are, I don't know, starting to go into debt again.
Well, I guess this is the year of the tiger, and the tiger rarely changes its stripes, so why should we expect the American consumer to do so? What we expect is that we could be seeing a savings rate of about 4.5% this year, which is less than half of what it was 20 years ago, but certainly better than what it was only 2 years ago. So consumers, yes, they continue to spend more than they make.
Now that's personal debt, Sam. Let's talk about the global level, and sovereign debt has been an issue investors have been grappling with. Markets around the world have been reacting favorably to this possible French-German rescue for Greece, and it's enormous debt problem there. We've heard others are in trouble as well. Who's next?
Well, the next likely country would be Spain. That could be then coming to the IMF, could be coming to the EU, et cetera, hat in hand, saying, gee, can you help us out if you helped out Greece? And then behind Spain could be Portugal, Italy, and Ireland.
Does it make it harder for the EU or the IMF to say, no, we can't help you, we can help Greece, but not anybody else?
Well, I think what they probably will be doing is a lot more behind-the-scenes activities to ensure that it does not become a public problem, or at least one that hits the headlines of every newspaper. But certainly it is a concern, and with a lot of the countries in Europe possibly slipping back into recession, they might not have a lot of money with which to bail out these countries.
I want to talk about the 8.8 earthquake in Chile over the weekend. Copper is a big export there, Sam. What are the economic repercussions of that disaster?
Well, as the economic countries start to expand, then the cost of production could be increasing, since copper is a very important component of building. But also you have agricultural products. Their summer is our winter, and yeah. So we purchase a lot of agriculture from them.
Sam Stovall, thanks. We do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
President Obama will be unveiling another education initiative in about 20 minutes or so. The proposal will target individual schools with high dropout rates and spend money to fix them. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is with us now from our Washington studio. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
So how would this new program work?
Well, states are being told to identify the bottom 5% of underperforming schools, and those schools will divide up the $900 million the president has budgeted for this program. Now, this is different, Steve, from the Race to the Top program that we've heard so much about, mm-hmm. and that's where states actually have to compete for federal money. The money in this program is already targeted to the worst performing schools, that is, schools with graduation rates below 60%.
But, Nancy, there are some strings attached to this grant money, right?
Definitely. And the White House has spelled out four different approaches, and districts must choose one approach to get the money. These approaches range from firing principals to closing failing schools. In some cases, those schools would be reopened as charters, or the students would be sent to better schools. Schools would have to evaluate their teachers' effectiveness also.
And why is the White House doing this, Nancy? What kind of dropout numbers are we talking about?
It's pretty significant, Steve. The White House says more than 1 million students drop out of school each year. And if you do the math, that works out to about 7,000 kids each school day.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reporting from Washington. Nancy, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, March 1st, 2010, at marketplace.org. Major legislation for financial reform is working its way through Congress. One of the biggest sticking points in the Senate is the question of an independent consumer financial protection agency that would oversee consumer financial products such as credit cards and mortgages. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has more.
The financial regulation bill pumps up oversight and gives the federal government a larger role in regulating financial products like securities and derivatives. But the bill doesn't do enough to police things like credit cards and mortgage loans, says Heather McGee with progressive think tank Demos.
We need a new federal regulator, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, who's going to have its sole mission be to protect consumers.
Right now, the agency that protects consumers also protects the financial soundness of banks. Critics say creating a separate agency is overkill, and the White House is beginning to back away from the idea. Travis Plunkett is with the Consumer Federation of America.
Consumer protection needs to be independent of the regulators who are focused on the safety and soundness of financial institutions. They have become entirely too cozy with the banks they regulate.
An independent consumer agency is part of the House bill now. The Senate Banking Committee is expected to reach an agreement about the agency this week. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Akio Toyoda continues on his whirlwind PR tour. The president of Toyota is now trying to win support after mass vehicle recalls in China. There's another big visitor in Beijing as well. Zimbabwe's top foreign diplomat is there, representing President Robert Mugabe's regime. China is one of the few countries left where Zimbabwe's delegation gets a warm welcome. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
So far, Zimbabwe's foreign minister has been well-received in Beijing, and it's not surprising. Beijing buys resources like gold, diamonds, and coal from Zimbabwe, and in return has pledged more than $25 billion in loans. China scholar Bates Gill at the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe and China go way back to pre-Zimbabwe in the 70s.
Back to the days when he was a revolutionary in Rhodesia. So these ties are sustained today through diplomatic and trade relationships.
Critics blast China, though, for selling weapons to Mugabe's regime and protecting it from UN sanctions. But recent signals suggest the ties are getting strained. In January, China warned Zimbabwe to pay its debts or no more loans.
It could be that a country like Zimbabwe has proven to be something of a burr under the saddle.
Zimbabwe's leaders say China's message was clear. We are business partners. Not friends. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Over the last couple of decades, bark beetles have trashed millions of acres of forests from Alaska to Southern California. In some areas, the beetles have had a significant impact on tourism and logging industries. But researchers in Arizona believe they may have found a way, an unusual way, to stop the bark beetles. Reporter Laurel Morales has the story.
Reagan McGuire is a 56-year-old college student at Northern Arizona University. He made his living driving trucks cross-country and hustling pool along the way. But now he works as a research assistant with an unorthodox way of thinking compared with other scientists.
A lot of them are locked in on specific ways of thinking. And I come along and I'm not burdened by a box. I don't know. So that gives me the freedom to look, to explore.
And explore he did. After doing some reading, an idea struck him. To chase the bark beetles out of the trees, why not use a military crowd control technique, one that emits powerful pulses of sound? He persuaded Richard Hofstetter to help him research the idea. Hofstetter is a beetle expert at Northern Arizona University.
Most of the knowledge we had of bark beetles and their control was use of chemicals. And it got me thinking that we're only looking at one of the many senses that they have.
With the go-ahead from Hofstetter, McGuire started with the most intense and annoying sounds he could imagine. For him, that was Rush Limbaugh backwards. McGuire also tried blasting music from Guns N' Roses, but none of it had an effect. So then they tried playing sounds of other bark beetles. After 6 years of studying the beetles, the researchers discovered if they tweaked the volume and pitch of the sound, they could incite a reaction. The breakthrough came when they observed a mating couple react to the sound of an aggressive male.
In this situation, the male is continually to be aggressive and eventually chews through the female. So he no longer thinks of her as a mate, but as an intruder.
And it's not just about getting beetles to eat other beetles. Hofstadter and McGuire have also manipulated beetle sounds that are so annoying they've driven the bugs to chew through plexiglass to escape. To find out which sounds work best, the researchers plan to go out into the field and test their findings on large stands of trees. If it's effective, they hope to eventually use this technology to chase termites out of homes. From Flagstaff, Arizona, I'm Laurel Morales for Marketplace.
An Indian scientist has found a way to triple a lifespan for a tomato. As good as that might sound, the so-called Stay Fresh tomato does have its enemies, as Raymond Thibodeau reports from New Delhi.
Tomatoes have a tiny farm-to-market window of up to 2 weeks, but researchers at the National Institute of Plant Genomes in Delhi can extend the shelf life of a tomato to 1.5 months. Here's Dr. Asis Datta, the director of the institute.
We characterize the two enzymes, alpha-man and beta-hex. We clone the genes and then design the construct to silence these two genes.
Simply put, Dr. Datta found two tiny switches in the tomato that cause it to age, and he basically turned them off. He says the same can be done for other fruit crops, such as bananas and mangoes. Many Indians are hailing the breakthrough as a boon, not only for the country's farmers, but also for India's children, nearly half of whom are malnourished. Some estimates show that as much as 40% of India's produce harvest is wasted because of a lack of adequate storage facilities and decent roads.
It's too expensive
to transport from the villages to the cities. If I give a tomato a shelf life of 45 days, you can even use a cart to reach the market. Farmers will be rich, and the consumer will get the lower price.
Vandana Shiva is a physicist who heads Navdanya, an agency that supports organic farming in India. She says if Dr. Datta's motivation is to help India's farmers, creating a longer-lasting tomato isn't the answer.
I have traveled through this country where farmers have plowed the tomato back into the field because it's more costly to harvest than the price that they would ever get back. That's the real crisis farmers are facing. It's a crisis of unfair trade, low prices for farmers, and it has to be solved in the marketplace.
Still, some analysts say the Stay Fresh tomato is likely to meet a fate similar to a genetically enhanced type of eggplant recently developed here. The eggplant had sailed through much of the approval process, then suddenly the process juddered to a halt, largely due to massive street protests by groups opposed to genetically modified food crops. Among those leading the protests, the farmers. In New Delhi, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
All right, how about a little wordplay? When I say Jeff Skilling, you say Enron scandal. When I say Jack Abramoff, you say political bribery. Both men are currently in federal prison, but you know what else they have in common? A Supreme Court hearing later today could result in a new trial for each one of them. Reporter Brett Neely has more.
Both men were convicted under the Honest Services Statute. The 22-year-old law was first applied to government corruption cases. In the past decade, prosecutors have used it for corporate crime, too. Randall Eliason is a former federal prosecutor. He says the statute is pretty vague.
What the law says is that it's a crime to defraud another person of their intangible right to honest services.
The Supreme Court could throw out the law and give Jeff Skilling and Jack Abramoff new trials. But it would make it harder to fight corruption, says Melanie Sloan of the group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington.
It means that prosecutors are going to have to find other ways to go after corrupt politicians. And sometimes that's pretty difficult.
The case hasn't been decided yet, but it's already having an impact. Prosecutors in the case against former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich added new charges that they hope will stick despite any Supreme Court decision on Skilling. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
And finally, here's an indication that the American economy has changed in recent years. College students are now paying for summer internships. The Chicago Tribune reports placement companies such as the Washington Center and the University of Dreams say the number of applicants has been on the rise. Fewer jobs are available and more students are looking to get their feet wet. And nothing says corporate commitment like paying to work for free. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts and grab the podcast while you're there. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.